Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we have author Eric Flint. He has published several novels and he's won the Writers of the Future contest. And he's also going to be a MC of the annual Dragon Awards. Welcome, Eric.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. Nice to be here.
Thank you for coming on. Why don't you tell the audience just a little short term, a little bit about yourself. How did you get into writing?
Well, I actually started writing very early as a teenager, and I wrote in high school and in college. And then once I left college, I got involved in other things. I stopped writing. I'd occasionally go back to doing it, but pretty much I didn't write much of anything again until I was 45 years old. And at that point, I had this one novel that I liked that I got about half written, but I never finished it. And I just didn't want to be on my deathbed regretting the fact that I'd never finished the novel. So I went ahead and finished it and tried to get it published. And didn't have much luck with that novel. I wrote a second one, and that one I did get published. That was a novel called Mother of Demons. And it was published in 1997. I was 50 years old at that point. I got started pretty late in life. And after that, my career as a writer went quite swiftly. I eventually did get the first novel I'd written published. I think it was the 12th book I got published. But I've been a full-time writer now for about 20 years. And in the course of that, I've written 60-some-odd novels. I'm not quite sure the exact number. And I've written a fair amount of short fiction, and also I've produced a lot of anthologies of short, you know, that I've compiled of short fiction. That's pretty much how I got started.
You are a science fiction writer, but do you read science fiction or do you read everything?
Well, I read everything. I started reading science fiction when I was 12 years old, but when I went to college, I was studying to be an historian. That was originally my plan was to become a professor of history, which I ended up not doing, but I've been interested in history my whole life, so I've kept reading it. I read a lot of stuff. But as far as sort of entertainment reading, it's more likely to be science fiction or fantasy than anything else. I read other stuff, but that's what I predominantly read.
I'm a history fan. I studied archaeology, so I didn't pursue it because, well, I don't know if it's the same in history, but when you're studying archaeology, in order to really be an archaeologist, you have to get your doctorate, and I didn't have enough money.
becoming an archaeologist was one of my early ambitions until, because I enjoyed reading archaeology, but then I finally realized that to actually be a practicing archaeologist, most of what you're going to do is pretty tedious. It's like being an astronomer, which I also had an ambition to be. It looks glamorous from a distance, and the end result might be, but the actual, you know, day-to-day work you're going to be doing is painstaking and slow and careful, and I don't necessarily have the temperament for that. So
I think my thing of not suiting it is I I love adventure. I love travel. It's the bugs, the snakes, the scorpions.
Yeah, and you're usually working out somewhere where it's likely to be way too hot or way too cold. You don't have good sleeping arrangements. Yeah, I know. It's I decided I'd do better as an historian where I could be in more comfortable surroundings. And then eventually I wound up not doing that anyway. Yeah, no, I do read archaeology. I like it. But it's just not something I wanted to do.
I read a lot of history and archaeology and watch a lot of the shows and stuff like that. Do you get inspired for your stories by reading? I mean, it's weird. And sometimes I'll have nothing at all to do with what I'm working on. I'll be watching something on Smithsonian Channel or Travel Channel or something, and all of a sudden I would like, oh, my God, that's a great idea. And I, like, jot it down real fast. So, do you ever get inspired like that?
Well, almost the big majority of my fiction, it's you know, it's considered science fiction and fantasy because it's, you know, it's all speculative. But most of it is historically based. Close to half of what I write is what they call alternate history, and it's what I'm best known for and where most of my money comes from. So what I'm doing is taking actual history and then making a change in it. Sometimes it involves a time travel element, sometimes it doesn't. But I'm working with the actual history of a period and then changing it around. And then other novels aren't directly historical, but they're based on history. My first novel, for instance, is pure science fiction. It involves a crash landing on an alien planet and the human survivors, how they handle it. And the alien species that inhabits that planet is in the Bronze Age. So in a way, it's kind of an alternate history. It's just an alternate history of aliens rather than humans. I did another series of novels with, started with Kathy Wentworth. I did two of them with her, and she passed away a few years ago. And then I'm continuing a series with another author named David Carrico. And the first book's called Course of Empire, and it's straight science fiction if you read it. But I got the idea from the history of the Roman conquest of the Greeks, which was kind of fascinating because over time it became pretty hard to tell who conquered who. Same thing happened when the Mongols conquered China. You know, you give it 100, 200 years, and it's the culture that actually is more sophisticated and richer culturally that winds up changing the other culture. So by the time you get to the late Roman Empire, people spoke Greek, and, you know, they still call themselves Romans, but it had actually become a Greek empire.
And also,
so that was
kind of
the model I used.
I was thinking of Alexander the Great when he conquered Egypt and the Ptolemy Empire started in Egypt. Really, they became more Egyptian than Greek.
Yeah. Well, I've actually got an alternate history series, first novel has come out, that's set right after the death of Alexander. First book is called The Alexander Inheritance, and it involves a time travel element where modern cruise ship gets transplanted back in time into the Mediterranean right about 2 years after Alexander's death. And then we go from there in terms of what people do and what impact they have on the history of the time. That period of history was really bloody as all hell because Alexander didn't leave any clear successor. Anyway, that tends to be the way I write. It's not necessarily, I mean, over half of what I write is not directly historical. It's science fiction, it's fantasy, but Usually, if you scratch the surface, you'll find my background and training as an historian is what underlies the books I write.
Yeah, do you have a favorite part of history that you're like that you have a real affinity for, that kind of sticks into
your
writing?
Not really. I find almost any period of history interesting. And the one thing I do try to do when I'm writing author history, I try to avoid the periods that have been toppled over 1,000 times. There's been, I don't know how many author history novels written about, what if Lee had won at Gettysburg, that kind of thing. I stay away from the American Civil War. I stay away from World War II. I stay away from the Napoleonic era just because people have done it over and over again. And instead, I look for other periods of history that are less well known, but where there's really interesting things that happened that you can talk about. So I have one series I did with David Drake that takes place in the later Roman Empire in the 6th century AD, which is very little known by most people. I did the thing I'm most well known for, which is called the 1632 series, takes place in the middle of the 30 Years' War in the 17th century, which most people don't know very much about, especially in the United States. And I've got another series started that takes place in the Jacksonian era in American history, which is a period that, again, it's that period between the Revolution and Civil War that most people have heard a few names. Everybody sort of knows who Andrew Jackson was, but they don't really know much about the history. So I try to use those kinds of periods just to stay away from, the ground that's already been trampled plenty of times.
When you start working on a novel and you're working on a period of history that's not very well known, how do you introduce it without sounding like it's a history lesson?
Yeah, that's, I don't know how to put it. That's sort of a skill, which I'm good at. And it's hard to explain it. What I try to do is this. I try to have the background sort of become clear in the course of what is the action that's actually happening, number one. So that it's not people being lectured to. They're seeing something happening, whatever it might be, but you just sort of absorb a lot of the historical background while you're at it. So, for instance, just to name one example, in my book Rivers of War, there's a scene where there's a wounded soldier staying with a family, and they're discussing the war. It's the War of 1812, but they're doing it over a meal, and a lot of the descriptive passages describe what they're eating, which is pretty gross from modern standards. But it's a real meal, and they're having a discussion, so it's kind of effortless for the reader to get through it, because they're not, I'm not droning in their ear. I can do an explanation of the state of medicine by depicting what a surgeon's tent looks like after a battle, which is really grisly, but it keeps people interested. If I do have to do just what we call an info dump, where I just don't have any choice, I've just simply got to drop information on people, I try to find some way to do it where it's intrinsically interesting to the reader. And what I look for in particular are things that are counterintuitive that will surprise people. And that way they get kind of interested in it, because they're actually, I didn't know that. But at the same time, they're actually getting information. But it's not, I don't know how to put it. It's not.
It's not being banged on their head.
Yeah, that, and also it's not. Yeah, I know. It's not being droned on. Sometimes you don't have any choice but to do just a straight info dump. And if that's the case, I just try to keep it pretty short, like one or two paragraphs, and not go on and on and on. But it's just one of the skills of writing historical fiction, and you're either good at it or you're not. And I'm good at it.
I also wanted to ask you about the Grantville Gazette. Could you tell us a little bit about that and how it came to be?
Yeah, that is a electronic magazine. The way it got started many years ago, when the 1632 series got off the ground, we produced an anthology of short fiction. And I discussed it with my publisher, Jim Bain, and we did something unusual. About half the stories in the anthology were commissioned from established authors, but the other half, we opened it up to fans of the series if they wanted to take a crack at writing short fiction. And we got over 100 stories submitted, and I selected 9 of them for the anthology. But in the course of doing that, we created at Bain's website a conference where people could submit stories. And once the anthology came out, people just kept submitting stories. It just becomes something they enjoyed doing. And after a while, I raised it with Jim, and I said, how about we produce a magazine where people could send this stuff in, and we'd publish it on occasion. He liked the idea, but he didn't want to deal with it himself, so he lent me the money to do it, and I set up the magazine. And it started just as a semi-pro magazine with occasional publication. There was no set publication date. The rates we paid were low. They were not professional rates. And then by the time we got to 2007, we had produced about a dozen issues, I think. And at that point, I talked it over with the lady who'd been editing the magazine and other people around it, and we decided we could actually do this on a real professional basis. So we reorganized the magazine and relaunched it in May of 2007 as a professional magazine, which is to say it has a regular schedule. It comes out every other month. It pays the writers the pay rates that are recognized as professional rates by the Science Fiction Writers Association. The editors get paid. The art worker gets paid. You know, it's a professional magazine. It's published only electronically, but we are now up to issue, I think it's 77. It's been going on now for over 11 years, and it's been profitable all the time, so it does fine. And the magazine is basically devoted to my 1632 series, which has become a huge sprawling enterprise in itself with over 20 novels in print and a bunch of anthologies. But the magazine's cool. Also there also. Yeah.
That's really cool. We're at the halfway point, so I want to give you a chance to talk about the Dragon Awards and any new stuff you have coming out that you want the listeners to know about.
The Dragon Awards were launched 2 years ago by DragonCon, and they are an award it's a purely fan-based award. It's open to be voted on by anybody. There's no cost involved. You don't have to have a membership or anything. So it's not organized the same way as the Hugo or the Nebula. It's just basically purely a fan award. Just whoever wants to register and nominate novels and vote can do so. It's only given out for novels. It's not given out for short fiction. And it's also broader than, I believe, 15 different awards given out, and 7 of them are for novels, but the other 8 awards are for games and graphic novels, you know, things like that. So it's not just literary in the traditional sense. And the reason we do that is just because the field has just become broader. It used to be purely literary, and now it includes a lot of other things. And it's given out once a year. It's announced at Dragon Con itself. The nominations this year will close, I think it's on July 20th or 21st. And then the voting has to be done by the time Dragon Con begins, which is Labor Day weekend. I work on it. Although I'm not one of the judges for it, which I am for the Writers of the Future contest. And that's partly because I my own novels get nominated. I can't very well be a judge. And there's no judge anyway for that novel. It's purely, for the Dragon Award, it's purely based on whoever the fans vote for.
That's pretty cool.
I
said that's pretty cool that it's a fan award.
Yeah, the first year we got, I think it was 5,000 votes, and second year is up to about 8,000. So we're hoping it'll keep growing. We'd like to have it as big as possible and drawing as many fans as possible. So we keep advertising it. Anybody who's interested, just Google Dragon Award or Dragon Con and then find it there, and it's easy to find. And the instructions for how to register a voter are very simple. It's an easy, quick process. It's not complicated.
Cool. When is the award ceremony?
It will be, it's at Dragon Con, and I'm not sure which day it is. If I recall correctly, Dragon Con always it runs through Labor Day weekend, so it's a 4-day convention, and it's usually, if I recall correctly, the first two Dragon Awards were done on Sunday, and I think that'll be the same this year. You can always just Google Dragon Awards, and it'll tell you when the ceremony is, but that's, if my memory's right, that's when it happens.
Okay. And do you have...
There's another question.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask that. Right. You asked me a second question. I'm trying to remember what it was.
I was asking about... That's what I was just going to prompt you. Do you have any books coming out or personal appearances that you'd like the listeners to know about?
In the way of books, I have a collection of short fiction called Worlds 2. It's called that because it's the second collection I've put out. That's being published by Bain Books, and it's coming out just a couple weeks from now in August, beginning of August. Then at the end of the year, in December, I have a novel which I wrote with Dave Freer called All the Plagues of Hell. And that's a cross between fantasy and alternate history. It's a series I began many years ago with Mercedes Lackey and Dave Freer, and this is the sixth novel in the series. It's a series, the first book in a series is called Shadow of the Lion, and it's sometimes better known by that than the title of the series is Heirs of Alexandria. That's coming out in December. Then the next thing I have coming out through Bain Books is the next novel in the 1632 series, which I wrote on my own. I do a lot of collaborative writing, but there's I write them what we call the mainline novels, which is the center of the series, and I write those alone, or I did a couple with David Weber. That's coming out in April. And in addition, I'm not sure yet, but I'm doing a series called the Demon series, which I started with Gorgoff and Paula Goodlett, who are two co-authors of mine. I've written several novels with. But we started a series. It's a cross again between fantasy and alternate history. And the first book's called The Demons of Paris. That one, though, I didn't. I published my. Well, I have my own publishing house called Ring of Fire Press, and we published it through that because we wanted to keep control over that completely. So that came out in March of this year, and we are working on the second book, but I don't know yet when we're going to be producing it, but it'll probably be sometime within the next year.
Okay. And do you have any personal appearances coming up?
Let's see. Yes, I'm going to be at Dragon Con. And then after that, I will be at, there's a convention here. I live in the Chicago area, and there's a convention here called Windy Con that I go to every year. I'll be at that. and I know I've agreed to go to a couple conventions next year, but I can't. Oh, and the only one I remember is next, oh boy, when is it? It's in July, I think. It's WesterCon. It takes place in Salt Lake City, Utah. And every year, the fans of the 1632 series hold a little convention of their own. And what we do is we piggyback on another convention so that, you know, we don't want to have to organize everything from scratch. What we do is we find a convention that's willing to host us, and then we'll bring extra people they wouldn't get otherwise, and they help us set up a track for the 1632 series. And this year, the one we're going to be doing is, well, this year it was at Heliosphere in New York, and the year before is at Balticon. But the coming year, 2019, it's going to be a WesterCon, so I'll be there. And I'm forgetting at least two other conventions that I know I've agreed to. I have it in my calendar. I won't forget to show up. If people log on to my website, which is just ericflint.net, Google my name, Eric Flint, and you'll find the website. I think it's the first thing that turns up on Google, or second. It's easy to find. And then look under on the menu on the right, it'll say appearances, and I keep a pretty up-to-date list of everywhere I'm going to be appearing over the next year or so right there.
Okay. And are you on social media, like Facebook, Instagram, Google Plus?
I have a Facebook. I do have a Facebook page to try to keep up to date. I don't have a Twitter account because, I just think I'd get in trouble with a Twitter account. Yes, I do have a presence on social media. I don't know. I sometimes get irritated, and if I get irritated and write something in Facebook, it just because I'm a writer, I have to write in complete sentences. I can't not do it. And I have to, it takes me long enough that I have time to think, do I really want to post this? Whereas I have a bad feeling if I went on Twitter, it's 140, because that's not a lot. And that, I don't know. I just think I'd get more trouble than it's worth if I had a Twitter account. I do keep my Facebook page. I try to make sure there's something new every few days there. You got to be careful about social media, because if you're not, it can just be an incredible time suck. And, you know, I mean, I've got books to write, and if I'm spending too much of my time chatting away, it's, you know, not getting any work done.
Yep, I totally understand. We've come to the end of the show. I do. You get sucked in. I've gotten sucked in myself. We've come to the end of the show. I want to thank you so much for taking part. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much for having me, Sherry.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Okay.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.